Okay, welcome back with Harry Cooper, yours truly, on this Friday night, taking a walk through history, some really interesting pictures to look at. Go to guests and pull Harry up and look under his name, and you will find the pictures. We are, I don't know what number we're on right now, we're third column, about to start column number four.
Four, right on the left side.
Yes.
That becomes image number 25.
That's it? Okay. What is it?
Okay, you take a look at that one and the next four, plus the certification there. Those are prints, actual prints, not photos, not copies, not in a book. These are the actual prints for the Horton flying wing jet-powered bomber. Because when we were in, now we're back in Uruguay, Martin found this guy at a gas station who loved collecting Third Reich stuff, and he sent us over to a friend of his whose grandfather was in the Luftwaffe, he said. So we went over there talking to this nice fella, big, huge guy, blue eyes, blonde hair, spoke with a German accent, excellent English, and he had said that his grandfather and his grandfather's brother joined the Luftwaffe. Okay, nice. So did a lot of people. And he said they were learning to fly gliders. Okay, fine. That's how they started learning, because the Treaty of Versailles prohibited powered aircraft for training and fighters. And then he said, maybe you heard of my grandfather. His name is Reimer Horton. Holy cow, this was Horton's grandson, Horton, the guy who designed the flying wing jet bomber. And so
HO-229.
That's it, the HO-229 stealth bomber, too, because it had not as much metal in it, et cetera, et cetera. So he is now a member, and so is his father, who was Reimer Horton's son.
Wow.
So they... you know, I was going to visit them again when I was down in Argentina this past this month. I was supposed to be there right now, except the Kung Flu scamdemic is locking everybody down, so we can't go anywhere. In Florida, we are wide open. No lockdowns, no nothing. Got a great governor, DeSantis, but... people aren't flying. I'm starting to put together our tours for next year to Germany, and by the time we go, which will be October next year to Germany, should be open, but the lady who runs the hotel we stay in, which is only about 5 kilometers from the Munich airport, she said you never hear airplanes because nobody can travel, and they're locked down to where only for business travel. If you want to go on vacation, too bad, you can't.
Uh-huh.
But they're going to lift that supposedly March or April. So we're planning the trips. And when I get down to Argentina, which is next November, I'm planning to spend an extra week after our tour people have gone home, and I'm going to go around and visit with Horton's son and grandson and interview them. And with some more on Hitler living down there. I finally, just about an hour before we went on the air, I finally found that videotape with where I was interviewing that lady who spent her honeymoon in 1954 down there.
Oh, you found it? Oh,
I found it about an hour before we went on air.
Well, we need to present that next time, if you can, if you want to.
Yeah, not a problem.
You need to upload it.
Yeah, you're going to have to chop it up a little because it's 50 minutes long.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to send it, it might be, how many megabytes is it?
I don't know. I'll probably put it on a stick drive and send that.
All right. Well, I'll get it edited. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, you'll have to cut it down a bit. So, oh, by the way, to your listener, Scott Perez. Scott, thank you for sending me the information on how to live to be an old guy. I appreciate that. I need all the help I can get.
Yeah, you're going to make it and then some. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Now, you see me, the next picture, me in the red shirt sitting next to a guy in a blue shirt.
Right.
Got that? Okay, we're in Brazil now. Jürgen was in the Waffen-SS. He was an artilleryman. And he lives down there in Brazil, very southern part of Brazil.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I can speak German, sort of. Jürgen, obviously, because he was a German. He spoke quite
well.
When
was this, excuse me, Harry, when was this picture taken of you and Jürgen? Approximately? 2008, 2009?
No.
Oh, this is just 2 years ago.
2016, I think it was, right after I fell off my roof.
2-3 years ago. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Now, this guy, Jürgen, was an artilleryman in the Waffen-SS.
Yep.
That is astounding. And look at his wife back there.
Yeah, she's a cool lady.
Yeah. All right. How sharp is Jürgen?
Oh, really sharp.
Yeah.
I started speaking German to him, and he was so excited. But, you know, if he's used to speaking Portuguese, which is similar to Spanish. And, you know, they have their words are so much longer to say something like the garage. In that language, it comes out something similar like the building in which you put the car, you know. So you have to speak very fast to get everything up. So he's speaking German at 100 miles an hour. And I told him, langsam bitte, langsam, slowly, please, slowly. And he's just going 100 miles an hour. And my friends, this time it's not with Martine, I was with Dr. C and Dr. F. They're just laughing their buns off. Click off to the next picture, number 32. Jürgen is telling me quite a bit about how the war was going. Nice
man.
Very
good.
Then we flip off to number 33.
Hold on. How long did you talk to him? For an hour or two? Something like that?
Probably about 2 hours.
What are these veterans... Now, that man has seen things that very few could even comprehend. Couldn't even...
Yeah.
How do they act? Do they ever say anything about how the war turned out and how the world turned out because Germany lost the war? How socialism, communism, Bolshevism overran Eastern Europe and killed so many people died. 100 million people died altogether from communism. Do they ever talk about that?
They open up with me because they know I'm. Excuse me, I'm not a so-called Nazi hunter, and I'm not a thrill seeker.
Sure.
I'm just an honest journalist. So they open up with me pretty well. And when we have our conventions, you know, that was great because the U-boat guys, who I know the best, they met in private. I belong to the American Legion, and the Legion post uptown here has a Huey helicopter out front and a flag up there. These guys in Germany can't. And so they got their dignity back, and they had a lot of fun at our conventions, and they flat out told me so. And so they opened up with their true feelings. And Jürgen, if you click up to number 33, you'll see what Jürgen's feelings were. And then click over to the next one, number 34. That's the backside. That's a card he got from Hitler. And that's Dr. F. holding it.
Is that actually signed?
Yeah.
It's like a postcard?
Right.
What a priceless piece of history. That's very interesting.
Yep.
And for those of you listening, I think you know how and I'm not speaking for Harry, he stays out of politics, but I think that what we're seeing now with the Great Reset and all of that, is what, to a large degree, no one's perfect. Germany was fighting against that kind of world totalitarianism, which communism represents. And hate him or whatever, that's fine. But had Germany won the war, no, we would not all have been speaking German. No, 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 no. The world would have been a different place financially, geopolitically. And that's pretty much it. Central banks would not be running the planet like they are now. It would be a different kind of environment entirely. This has all been smeared into oblivion by the rewriters and recreators of history that often never happened. So
yeah,
just keep that
fiction.
In mind.
A lot of fiction. So, okay, click on over from 34.
All right, let me say one other thing about
that. I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
our greatest general in World War II was General George Patton. And if you think Patton was a fool, then you're not an American. General Patton was brilliant. General Patton said at the
great
end of the
man.
War, we got screwed. We fought the wrong enemy. He knew. He figured it out. And then he knew about Eisenhower's genocide camps.
The
in
starvation
which at least
camps,
2 million, 2 million Germans were just allowed to die hideous, horrible deaths. This is,
yeah,
this
they
is,
were prohibited to have food. They slept on the ground because there were no buildings, and they were food and water was withheld until at least 1.1 million starved to death. That must have been a horrible, long, slow.
See, this is Ike. All right, this is your general, your future president. This was a true Holocaust for that 1+ million German men. And boys and others who fought, who surrendered. If they knew what was in store for them, not one of them would have surrendered. None of them.
I'm sure.
So, I mean, it just all makes me sick. The truth of history is withheld, especially from our younger people. They just don't know. And they chances are they'll never know. If this overthrow of this country and the world is successful, history will cease to exist as we knew it.
Yeah, young people today are not—they're not stupid, but they're ignorant. They have been given propaganda instead of teaching. But you know, what can you do? I keep telling my wife here. I'm 81 years old. I keep telling my wife I'm going to go back to college so I can get into fights with these liberal professors.
Wouldn't do any good. You're not going to change their minds. They're already gone. Bolsheviks.
I'd feel better.
It wouldn't matter. They wouldn't even hear you. They just
probably
turn around
not.
What you said and throw it right at you. They're communists, and they take no prisoners. They don't care. They do not care. All right, next picture is an issue of Mein Kampf, the world's second second best-selling book in world history.
That's true. Second only to the Holy Bible. I don't remember if his was signed or not. I've got one around here somewhere. I got 5,000 books here, and I've got a copy of Mein Kampf, published 1943, that's hand-signed by Hitler. It's around here someplace.
That's a new book, Harry. If that book is hand-signed, it was hand-signed before 1962 and after 1946.
Hand-signed during the war years.
Could have been, but it looks new.
The one that I have, because I got it from somebody in Germany.
Yeah, yours is, but this one, I don't know. Anyway, that's amazing.
Yep.
All right, very
Jürgen's
nice.
Jürgen's a cool guy.
Yeah.
And there you see the next picture, number 36. That's us departing. Cooper in the red shirt, Dr. F. He's an eye surgeon, and apparently he's quite a good one because he's got a two-story penthouse apartment and a very nice car, and he's got a motorcycle. It's kind of wild for a doctor. And then there's Jürgen, and then there's Dr. C. She's an OB-GYN, and Dr. F and Dr. C are madly in love. And
you're an
I
item.
Think by... Yeah, I think by now they've moved in together. They were talking about that when I was down there. So I haven't talked to them on the phone, but we email back and forth, of course. Mm-hmm. Nice people, very nice people.
Well, they have the mystery book. So
yep,
among
and
other
we don't
things.
Say too much more about it until we get to it. No names.
Nope. Okay. Little German entrance to the house. Is that, that's the front gate?
No, now we're back into,
where is it?
We're in Uruguay now.
Okay.
And
number 37.
I'm sorry, Argentina, because that's the Argentine flag there.
Okay.
Up in northern Argentina. And we're driving down the highway there. You can see the tanker truck going up. That's where we were going. And we saw this, and holy cow, let's go take a look. So we went in there, and there's the two little German kids. And then the next picture, number 38, there's this huge, big beer hall and souvenir shop, all German. And click on the next picture, number 39, you know, I told you I was falling in love with that 7-foot Valkyrie until I found out she was only painted on a piece of plywood. And as you point out, I should be careful where she's pointing her dagger.
She could have turned you into a soprano if that was a real woman.
I wouldn't want that, no.
No.
Right. So, it's a beautiful painting. And
it really almost looks lifelike. I mean, it does look lifelike.
Look, it's an excellent painting. And the word Alemania, that's Spanish, uh-huh, means German.
Uh-huh.
So you go to the next one, number 40, and they got the wine flowing out of the barrel. And number 41, beer flowing out of the barrel. They had a lot of beer over there. And number 42, you got the beer wagon. Everything about it was German, except it was in Spanish. They had the German flag flying, the new German flag, not the other one. Otherwise, the spitlickers would have been down there yelling at them.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a really pleasant stop along the way.
Uh-huh.
And that's in Argentina. And we were heading into, where the hell were we going? I think we were still staying in Argentina. You click on it. No, it's Uruguay where we went after this, Uruguay. So go to photo number 43, the long, long road.
Okay.
Got it?
Got it. Yeah.
Okay. Keep it in your mind and then go to the next one, number 44. That's a hand-drawn chart of that same area. And you look at the top of that purple line where it's yellow and there's a circle. That's where I took that photo. This sketch drawing is from the Warriors.
And okay, hold on. That's road or highway 90 that comes in from the right? Is that what you're on?
Right. Hold on a second.
See, there's a 90 there on the right, 90, to the right of the yellow circle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I guess
the yellow
what
circle
it
is not on the main road. It's on a dirt road, I guess.
That's okay. Correct, yeah. And
all right. And now who put the yellow mark on there and the pink mark? This is a copy and you did that?
No, electronically.
Okay.
No, I scanned the photo and then I put that on there electronically. But
okay,
the
handwriting,
that's from Pizarro, my agent
who's
no longer with us. Right, the handwriting is Pizarro. He had all this
stuff.
So
it was just a map showing the roadway and that was it. There wasn't a lot of descriptive language on there. Something's been blacked out at the top.
Right.
So Pizarro went down there, Pizarro identified all those things and made notes.
Yep.
Okay. This original map was a map for an air crew to find a landing strip.
That is exactly right. And the yellow circle was the tree area, the clump of trees. You look back on the picture number 43, off to your left, there was a stand of trees, and they had put an RDF station in there so that the plane could navigate and land alongside that road. Back in those days, the phone poles didn't exist, and the big trees at the side of the road didn't exist. So they landed there with that JU-390.
Right.
And on that angle road, you see, from the yellow circle, that angle road that goes up to your right, is that dirt road that you saw in the picture. And incidentally, Highway 90 might have been a major road back then, but it still was. It wasn't an interstate, that's for sure.
Okay, well, that straight, that long straight road didn't have trees on it back in 1945. Or poles on the right. It was just a long straight road.
Dirt road.
And would have been in the winter there, so the green grass would not have been so tall. And
right.
We think that the plane landed there. The next two pictures show that plane, or it has to be that plane.
Yeah, they only made three of them. Right. And the third one, which, you know, they named them V1, V2, and V3. That had nothing to do with the rockets, but that's just what they named them. V3 never got completed. V1, there was something wrong with V1, so they took the propellers off of V1, stuck them on V2, which was 3 meters longer than V1, so it had more fuel capacity, and that's why they flew it with the big guy on board from Norway all the way down to this area, right outside a town called Paysandú.
How did he get from Spain to Norway? Do we know that?
Yeah, yes and no. I'm not totally,
okay.
Excuse me, not totally zeroed in on that. We got piles and piles of stuff to go through yet. I've got literally thousands of documents from Pizarro, and I'm still trying to get through them all.
Wow. Okay, so the photograph is the real plane. The next color picture is someone built an absolutely fabulous reproduction of it as a model.
Yeah, it's a good-looking, the whole layout, with the worn-out grass in some areas and the truck far side.
Well, I looked for it. I found it. Okay. So this is the plane that we believe highly likely flew Hitler, Eva Braun, and a number of other people straight to Argentina.
Yep. It had, I think, 7,000-mile range.
Yeah. And this plane, by the way, earlier in the war, flew apparently on many flights, long-distance flights, which we'll talk about another time.
Right, over the pole.
Yeah, to Japan. So there was some suggestion that it actually flew over the U.S. at one point.
That's an artist concept, and the jury's still out on that.
Okay. All right, very good. We're going to continue, so go right ahead. Next picture.
Okay. Next one, you got a pink hotel. And again, I electronically blocked out the name. That's in Uruguay now, and with Martin. Excuse me. This is only about, not even 1 kilometer away from a house where, I guess it was Mengele, came to marry his widowed sister-in-law. His brother had died, and his sister-in-law came to this town. Mengele came to this town, and they got married primarily for business purpose, protect and control money or something. And the guy who owns the house now, he had, I think we counted 13 guard dogs running around the property. And I was still feeling pretty beat up because I'd just fallen off my roof 2 weeks before. So I stayed in the car. Martin talked to the guy, went into the house, and went all through the house. And this is where Mengele lived for about 8 days while he married his sister-in-law. Then Martin and I came over to this hotel. And what's unique about this hotel, you'll see in a minute, and all the time we were there, which was pretty much a whole day, did not see one single guest. Remember, the power station, a huge power station, we didn't see anybody but the guard. here, this great big hotel. We never saw any people except the lady who ran it and her daughter. So let's go up number to 48. That's the veranda. Nice looking hotel. Yeah, more or less, kind of like Key Largo. And number 49, that's what it looked like back in 1924. Mm. And number 50 is the bar. Not a soul there except the lady that ran it and her daughter. Now you look to number, the next one, the tall one, whatever the heck number that is. That'd be number 51.
That bar looks awfully nice to be in that old of a building.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Yeah.
Anyhow, you look at the next one, the tall photo.
Yeah.
And you see the white footstool up against the wall.
Right.
And you see on the left side, the hatch was opened. Now, the hatch is normally closed, and there's a white rug, white furry rug on top of it, and there's a white sofa, and then that white footstool is on top of the door.
So that's lifted up to your left, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, the door is folded up on the left, and the sofa is behind where I'm standing taking a picture, and we moved the footstool up against the wind of the wall so we could take the carpet up. And now we go downstairs. What the hell kind of hotel has bunkers and tunnels underneath it in Uruguay? So then you go to the next couple, and they're using it for not a brewery, because they're not brewing anything, but I guess maybe at one time they did. And now it's just all the brewing apparatus down there. Number 53 is a kettle. Number 54 shows a bunch of clerics. I don't know, maybe it's the 1920s in Chicago. They're making bathtub gin. But this is all about 30, 40, 50 feet down underground. Number 55.
Wow.
Around that wall, and then you see a doorway off to the right. We went through that doorway, and it just, who builds a bunker system like this underneath a hotel out in the middle of nowhere? I mean, it was in the middle of nowhere.
Where was the hotel again, approximately? Just approximately, this hotel.
I'd be hard-pressed to try to remember. I really don't remember.
See, the illustration on the wall shows it might have been something that monks inhabited and made wine in. I don't know. See that picture? Is that an old picture or is that a new drawing?
Right. I think the owner, the lady, said that at one point in time, this place had been a convent or a monastery, but during the war, it had a different reason.
Okay, but this hotel is in Argentina.
No,
still
Uruguay.
In Uruguay. We're back in Uruguay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the TBA, the tri-border area, where Uruguay, Argentina, and Paraguay, and a little bit of Brazil all come together.
It's a quad.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. You never know. There's probably a lot more down there underground in areas that we'll never know about.
I'm trying to dig it out.
Yeah.
So, now number 57, the white Volkswagen Bug.
Yeah.
Down in South America, interesting. We're in
Brazil. Was the last place that they were mass producing VW Beetles.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. I know in Argentina they all had a bunch of Ford Falcons from the 1960s.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's a later model Beetle.
Okay. Yeah. The earlier ones, I remember seeing them in Germany, right behind the driver's window in the doorpost. They had a little arm that flipped up, and that was your directional signal.
I had one of those. It had a little light
kidding.
In it. Yes, it was a 54, and it had a little light in it, and the arm popped up. And then it would go back down, like a little, if you held your arm out the window and held it up, put it down.
Right.
It was a little
like a little semaphore.
Yeah, it was wild. I remember that.
So anyhow, here's the white beetle in front of a very interesting building. Click on to number 58 next, and you'll see where I put in the red arrow.
Yes.
That's the German eagle.
Sure is.
And we're a long way from Germany. Okay,
still
click over
Uruguay?
To Brazil.
Okay.
Brazil.
All right.
Okay, now here, the only reason I took a picture of this bathtub is for the wall. People would think that's blue and white, but it's not. It's white and blue, which are the colors of Bavaria, Weiss und Blau.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Oh, it gets better. So now we go into number 60.
And where are we here? We're not in this hotel still, are we?
No, not the not the hotel. We're in the building behind the Volkswagen.
The VW, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And here we are at the bar with the lady who kind of is in charge at the moment, Dr. F. Jackson.
Yeah.
He was a school teacher teaching languages, so he came along as an interpreter.
I see.
Mostly for me, because they could speak, everybody there can speak Portuguese because they're in Brazil. And Dr. C, the OB-GYN, nice lady.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're chatting, and so this lady says, come on, she showed us around. Next picture, number 61, it's kind of like a Roman atrium. And on the left side, you see a lot of double doors. Directly ahead, you see double doors. But on the right, you got little alcoves. So you click on picture, the next one, picture number 62, and what do you got in these little alcoves? Beautiful paintings of the German Wehrmacht at Stalingrad.
Must have been a veteran there, huh? Wow.
Number 63, same thing. Number 64.
Identify this location again, please, for people who may not be able to follow.
Yeah, Brazil. Where in Brazil? I don't know, southeastern.
Now, this is that house?
That big building by the Volkswagen Bug.
Yeah, I thought it was a residence. It's bigger than that, okay.
It's bigger than it looked, and it goes on a bit. So we're on 64 now, and we go to 65, Berlin. This is 10,000 miles away from Berlin, but it says Berlin, and there's a picture of a guy, a soldier, in the cold. That's number 65.
Look at those pictures.
They're awesome. They're incredible art.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a photograph, isn't it? Blown up somehow?
I don't know.
I don't believe that's a... I think that's a photograph. Yeah, that's a photograph.
Okay.
Look at it with a magnifying glass. It's a photograph.
Okay.
That may have been inserted later on. Somebody may have had it blown up. But anyhow,
could
it's
have been.
A photograph.
All right. But it's interesting to find something like this in Brazil.
Oh, it's bizarre.
At the other end of the world from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we click on 65 and go to 66. And what's that? That's not the peace symbol upside down, which I refer to as the footprint of an American chicken. But this is the old Sigrunen emblem, and this particular character means something along the lines of he has risen.
Hmm.
And you can read into that whatever you like.
Huh. Okay, very good.
Number 67. What do you got? You just got wood with a hole in it. Go to 68, and you'll see where I've circled the hole, and the straight lines are the edges of that trap door in this building with the Volkswagen.
It's a finger grab hole.
Yep, it is. Yep, it is. So go to number 69, and there's that door up against the wall, and the lady who's in charge is leading us down into the bunker with Dr. F right behind her and the rest of us following. Then you can just click through these. There's Dr. F, number 3 on his sleeve, down in the first of the bunkers. There's 3 bunkers under this place. Number 71 is another of that same bunker. Now number 72 is going down, I think, into a different bunker. Maybe it's the same one. I'm kind of tossed around, but here we go. Number 773, that's another bunker. And you see the blue and yellow colors. I don't know what that means, but nice and bright. Now 74, that's a ladder going down into the third bunker. We didn't go down there.
Just down and down and down, deeper and deeper.
Yeah. Why? Why is all that stuff over there, all those pictures of the Wehrmacht in Stalingrad, and those guys, judging from their uniform, looked like they were Waffen-SS.
So what the heck
is all that?
There may have been a lot of artifacts in this place at one time.
Yeah, I'm hoping to be able to go back there. But, you know, as you know, our angel, Jack Goodyear, passed away. He's the one who financed our expeditions down there to get all this stuff, but he passed away. Nice man, very nice man. And he would have loved to go on, but his health was not all that good.
Right.
So, okay, we're on 74. And if there's anything you want to go back and talk about, we can do that. Now we are going into this stuff we're not going to talk about much. Photo 75. There's Dr. C, Dr. F, Cooper, and Jackson. And there's that book. There's that book, Jeff. You know what the book I'm talking about.
I do.
So click up to the
that book,
next one.
That book is one of the most remarkable books on the planet. And I'm not exaggerating.
Boy.
It's just bizarre how that how that person could have kept that book for all that time. Look how big it is.
Yeah, it's huge. I've held it in my hands. The thing weighs a ton. And almost everything in there is handwritten, and the pictures are hand-drawn. Click up to number 77.
Mm-hmm.
And
Did that book start out that big, or it doesn't look to me like there's evidence of pages added? It looks like
I don't know.
I'm just looking at the binding. It looks like it was put together in the beginning, and this person bought this book as a younger person, much younger, and just kept going, kept adding.
Could have
to
been.
It.
I don't know. It's a massive, massive, huge book, and the stuff in it is priceless. You know, if this thing was auctioned off to collectors, it would go for six figures easy. If you know, when it was auctioned, if it got auctioned off,
well, it's what ought to be done with it is each page should be photographed and commentary done on, and it turned into a documentary. It's real.
Right.
It's history.
Oh, it is. It is. But it's in the possession of Dr. F. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and rightfully so, it's the two of them, I guess, now, because they're a partnership. They won't let it go out of their little town, even. Understandable. The thing is priceless.
Yeah.
You click on up to number 79, you see all the sketches and drawings. And they've written a book based on this, and I'm trying to help them get it put together, but the book is almost 1,400 pages long.
It's in English, isn't it?
Huh?
It's in English. It's in English, or is it still in German?
Neither. It was originally done in Portuguese, the book was, but it's been translated into English with the photos. But, like I say, it's 1,400 pages long.
Where can I get a copy of this? Do you have a copy of it?
Of the book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a copy. They gave me, Dr. C and Dr. F gave me this in PDF, which I have on my computer, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And it's
Can
it's
I acquire a
book.
Hard copy of this in English? Do they print them in hard copy format at all, or is it all
no, not yet. I've told them I'd try to whittle it down and get it published, but you know, first off, I haven't had a lot of time to go into it. You can't try to market a 1,400-page long book.
Well, if it contains the history that that book does, you can.
Yeah. There's some of it I have to go through and clean up a little bit, too, because, you know, they're a product of the new history, and so they refer to Nazis and war criminals and evil people, etc. And I tell them, just, you know, stick to the story of the woman and leave all the rest of the stuff out of it, because all it does is take up pages and confuse people.
No, it is, no doubt it could be edited down, but that would be a monumental job, and you'd have
You're
to
not
actually
kidding.
Go down there and do it there, and then photograph each page and whatever.
Oh, boy, yeah. That would be something. Photograph
each
page.
Maybe Dr. F will do it at some point, and we can market it for him.
That would be great. I'll let him know.
Yeah, tell him I'll do whatever I can, and we can. We have a worldwide following here, and if that book is notated in English, it makes it far more saleable.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
And well, I'm in contact with them. They're members of Shark Hunters. At least he is. And then you click on the last.
All right. So who wrote the damn book? Huh? Who wrote
Fraulein Geheim.
There she is. Fraulein Geheim.
There she is, Fraulein Geheim.
Now look closely at that face. Fraulein Geheim. Geheim.
I left it blurred for a reason.
That's fine.
Fraulein Geheim, if you understand German, it means Miss Secret.
We're going to leave it there? That's fine with me.
Yeah, that's it for now. We can do another show on this whole thing if you want.
Sometime, maybe if I don't know how many photographs of the book, but if you could get Dr. F to put together, say, 50 key photos and send them up to you, we could do a program on it. If he had English translations of the pages and their import and identify
assuming
various
I can retrieve it, I've got the whole English version on my computer with the photos and the descriptions. Assuming I can retrieve it.
Don't say that. Just say when you can
retrieve.
You're going to hire some
it.
Little skinny kid with a pipe and orange hair, and he's a techie, and he's going to come and save your hard drive.
Okay. No, the guy I know is not a little skinny kid with orange hair and a pipe, but he used to work for Google, so he's learned a lot.
Yeah, he knows a lot too. That.
Probably. Let's
well,
hope he
get
doesn't
him.
Have
get
an
him.
Accident.
You got to get him over there. Just know, come on. Let's get this done.
Yeah.
Don't mess around anymore. Get him over there and get it fixed.
Probably the hot setup. Yeah. Everything's going nuts all lately, and
I know.
We were running on thin bucks anyhow, and little Jimmy just decided to have a split in the radiator. So I got to put a new radiator in for $600, and I found out. They pointed out
this?
You don't find, huh?
When did it? When did this happen?
2 days ago. I had it in for an oil change, and I could smell some antifreeze. And they showed me later where it was leaking at the tank. And you can't find a radiator repair shop anymore because you can't repair them. They're throwaways. The tanks are plastic, and the waffling in there, the little fins, that's all aluminum, and it's all pressed together, and of course made in China.
Right.
So it's a throwaway, and it's $200-something just to replace the thing because it ain't an easy job.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big engine. It's a 8.1 liter, which is 496 cubic inches, and it's got air conditioning, power steering, transmission,
that
cooler.
That Jimmy has a 496 cubic inch engine? That's that big? Is it a V8 or a
V10? No, V8, Ford's the only one that made a V10. And this one has got the heavy-duty towing package. It's a 2500 HD. It's got the towing package on it. And on the shifter arm, that you know, it's up on the column, if you push a button in the end of it, then it goes into the extra strong towing package, and you know, tow the travel trailer. I got it with I bought it with 250,000 miles on it, and everything was working beautifully. But now, you know, I don't have car payments because it was only $6,500.
I remember when you bought it.
Yeah, 2 years ago, and but now, you know, pieces break. It's got 267,000 miles on it now. But that is, man, that engine is something else. Of course, your gas mileage is nothing to write home to mother about.
No. Well,
but then
right,
mother never writes back.
No.
Yeah.
You'll
yeah, you'll just a pain in the neck. Everything happened at once. The radiator went bad on little Jimmy, and I had the head crash on my computer, and there were a couple other things. Oh, and like I said, the snowbirds across the street got hit by the drug dealers that tore everything up. Right. They not only stole everything they could out of the trailer and out of the utility trailer, they took the inverter out of the fifth wheel that turns the 110-volt down to 12-volt for the lights and stuff, and they stole the power cable. It's a 50-amp cable, which is about as thick as a quarter, and to buy them new, they're $400-$600, and they sold, I'm sure they sold it to the scrap dealer for the copper in there. Probably got $10 worth out of it, but these poor people, you know, and then they stole a car, too. Of course, the guy's car was kind of a piece of junk, but still, you know, you steal a car, it comes under Grand Theft Auto. So they really turned the screws on it, and they caught the guy that stole the car, and he confessed, and they're trying to get him to roll on his buddies. And, you know, I say just shoot him and be done with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, there's been a lot of stuff happening to a lot of people that is not good. It's, October was bad. November is bad. Was bad. It's about over, not quite. But we're not out of the woods by a mile. No.
No, if Trump is able to pull the rabbit out of a hat and save his re-election, you watch how violent things get.
Oh, I know.
Except not in Florida, though. Another law that DeSantis pushed through was if you're being attacked by a mob, demonstrations and all that, you can shoot them. And if a mob decides to block a highway, like they love to do, block interstates, they get arrested. It's a third-degree felony with 5 years in the pokey.
Wow.
Yeah, I like Florida.
Yeah, well, this DeSantis seems like a damned good and popular governor, from what I've been able to pick up out here.
It's kind of a mini me to Donald Trump. Yeah.
Look at this this creep in California. This creep.
You mean Nancy Pelosi's nephew?
That's the one. I mean, he goes out to high-end restaurants while the rest of the state eats crap. The guy is a pig. He's an elite communist pig, and I'm just not ashamed to say it. And the California legislature, a lot of it, flew off to Maui for a big holiday. They're there now.
Really?
And everybody, even if you're a resident of Hawaii, when you fly back, you have to do a 2-week quarantine.
Oh boy.
But the California legislators didn't have to.
Not them, of course. Of course not.
Of course,
it's all taxpayer money that's sending them out there.
Right. Just nuts. Nuts.
Yeah.
Wonderful program, sir. Really well done. Great stuff. We'll do it again next month.
And Sounds like a plan.
Get the skinny kid with a pipe out there, will you? Don't mess around.
I'll give him a call tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Harry. Great job.
All right. Take care, Jeff.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Admiral Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. What a place for real history. Back with more.